From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and I am on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We are entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs. We share the stories on this show of winning. And in many cases, they're entrepreneurial stories. And in today's show, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get the story of LogRx and Clive Savakul. He's got the coolest name in entrepreneurship here in the Sacramento region. Clive has built this company, LogRx, that is tracking medical prescriptions, medicine, if you will, in ambulances and for first responders out there, because they're tracking all this, you know, they're carrying around all this medicine, and to make sure that it is, you know, kept track of. It's such an important thing, because when we, you know how addictive some of these medications can be if they fall into the wrong hands. So just making sure that our government agencies and our ambulances and others have the right processes in place in order to keep those precious items in the right hands. Very important. So it's going to be an interesting story, too, for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's bootstrapping this company. So this is a tech company. This platform is a tech company that in most cases we might think would be venture capital backed. But Clive and his co-founder have decided to utilize their own money and begin raising money from their customers. What a concept. And build the company without going out and getting venture capital. We'll talk a little bit about that on the show, but I mean, it begs the question, when is the right time to get venture capital? And I think in many cases, the longer you wait, the better chance you have of hanging on to a larger chunk of your company that might end up being better from a financial standpoint. It gives you more control of your company for longer. On the other hand, somebody might argue that if the window of opportunity is so great, maybe you should take venture capital early so you can throw fuel on the fire. Anyway, these are debatable items, and you'll get a little bit of sense on that on the show as to what he was thinking. However, the show is also filled with a discussion about what's happening up with the Forest Hill fire, the mosquito fire. And again, I recorded this show a couple of weeks ago. So when Clive came out, this was toward the beginning of that fire. And when he pulls into our parking lot, he sees the fire trucks and so on. Well, Clive is the former fire chief of the city or town of South Lake Tahoe. So he's been in the fire industry for years and years and years. So he has this tremendous insight as to what these firefighters are going through on the show. So there's going to be a lot of that at the beginning of the show. So I want you to sort of bear with it, but realize the conversation is, you know, it's 2 weeks ago, so things have changed. Thank God we've got some rain, and hopefully, you know, this thing can get better contained, because it's displaced so many people. And at the end of the show, I will share some thoughts about what it's like to get displaced, what it's like to go through something difficult. I have somebody that goes to yoga with me. I'll give a little bit of her story and give my perspective on how to best deal with some of those hardships that can take place when we end up needing to get evacuated from our home. So stick around. Hear the story of Clive Savakul, and CEO. He is the CEO of LogRx.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Super excited about today's show. We have the founder and CEO of LogRx. They are a medical tracking system provider. It's a very unique business. And the man that's going to be sharing this startup success story is a guy by the name of Clive Savakool. You got like the coolest name in the world, Savakool.
Thanks.
I mean, yeah. Who wouldn't want that name?
Yeah, I've actually erased motorcycles in the back of my suit is your last name. And I've had people ask me, did you make that up? No, it's family name.
Superman, Savakool. So I want to start by, so you are the founder of this, emerging startup that's growing fast, solving a huge problem. But before we get into the business, you are also a former fire chief in South Lake Tahoe. And as you pulled into the Growth Factory parking lot today, you probably saw all the fire engines out there. That was basically to celebrate you as a former fire chief. No, I think they're just parking here because of the fire. Probably just need a place to park their engines. But you have this unique insight as a longtime firefighter into what's going on right now up in the Forest Hill area and how it's expanding. So could you shed a little light on what these firefighters must be going through right now?
Sure, yeah. There's five engines out in the parking lot, which is essentially a strike team.
Okay.
And so since they're parked here, I'm guessing there's a hotel nearby, and this is probably their day off.
Okay, yeah, it's the Ritz next door.
Yeah, so yeah. this is their day off, which means they probably spent the last 24 hours working their tails off up at the Mosquito Fire, trying to save all the communities. I know it's bumping up against some of the smaller towns like Georgetown and Garden Valley. Mm-hmm. Actually was texting with the chiefs up there and just asking how they're doing, if they need anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're working hard, and right now there's fewer resources in California to help battle these fires. And considering there's more fires going on than past history, everyone's spread thin. So those firefighters are working really hard.
And I talk to entrepreneurs every day. I've been doing this for a long time, and it's a super stressful job to build a business and take this risk and, maybe put it all on the line in many cases to try to change the world. And it's stressful. You indicated when we talked earlier that it's less stressful than being a fire chief, and I can imagine what the leadership must be doing right now. You are playing with people's lives, not playing. You're dealing with that, trying to save people.
There is a lot more stress, and even on top of the stress of having so many different moving parts, so many different people you have to work with, and trying to collaborate and get things done. Because even though you have the highest rank in the organization, you still got to influence others and help them see the vision of the organization. But really the stressful part comes, middle of the night when your phone goes off and you have to have all your cell phones you got sitting next to your bed in case something happens.
Oh, wow.
And your guys need you, and you need to be able to drop everything, head out and take care of it. And so after 25 years of being a firefighter and finally being able to turn my cell phone off at night, or I still keep it on for my business in case a customer has issues. But it's not the same as if, one of your firefighters get burned or something like that. And so I imagine it's a lot like being a parent and a kid's off on, a college or something like that. You stress a little bit because you're not there. And there's potential for something to go south. Even though you do everything you can to keep everyone safe, but there's a big element of stress in that.
So who's in charge of that fire? Do you know who's sort of like the top person that has to make the key decisions?
So it's not going to be one person. Okay. What they do is they have what's called an incident management team. And so an incident management team is basically made up of specialists that might be in operations, someone might be in logistics, and they get all these teams. And the state and the federal government have these different teams, and they have members of all these different organizations on those teams. And so for the Caldor fire last year, we actually had two separate incident management teams, one for the west side of the hill and one for the Tahoe side. And so these teams have specialists made up. So they do this all summer long. They go from big fire to big fire. And so they're very, very good at what they do. And so they do have an incident commander in that incident command post, but they might not be all the ones planning operations. They're kind of just the one to help be at the top and help coordinate. But it's a huge effort. And honestly, Cal Fire and the Forest Service are very good at setting these teams up.
And if you had any words of encouragement or wisdom to these firefighters and the people in leadership, I'm kind of curious what you would say to them, because safety of the families that live there, they're evacuating. So luckily they appear to be safe. They may lose a lot of their belongings. But what you might say to the troops and what you might say to the leadership team and keeping these guys safe?
It's a team effort. And so I think humility is a huge factor, especially the higher up you get in ranks, because at some point you might have a different goal or something in an organization. Last year with the Calder fire, we were looking at repopulating sooner than some other folks might have wanted to. And we all got along great, but we just have to have our discussions. And being humble allows you to not think that you have to know everything. If you rely on those around you, there was a assistant chief with Cal Fire that I would call multiple times a day to get his perspective on the fire behavior and what's happening, because he's smarter than me with this stuff. He does fuel modeling all day long to find out what the fire is going to do. So I would recognize my position as helping run the emergency operations center in South Lake Tahoe, that this guy knows more than me. And I need to recognize and show and even tell like the city manager and come to me. And I said, let me call Chief Brian and ask him, because he's going to be able to give us a better perspective. And so probably the one thing is humility and relying on one another as a team effort is really key for these big incidents, because you can't do it all yourself.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to point out to our audience too, that this, it is, what's the date today, Scott? The 14th, 13th, 14th, 13th, I guess. So this is not going to air for a couple of weeks. So we don't know what's going to happen, you know, a week from now, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. But right now I think it's, I heard on the news, like 10% contained or maybe less. I don't really know, but it's, so this is not, breaking news in any way of where we're at. It could be a lot worse, or it could be hopefully, better in some way, at least more contained. So.
Yeah. And anytime you're managing a major incident, you basically have to plan for the worst and hope for the best. Mm-hmm. And so, when this airs, maybe the mosquito will be under control and there will be a whole new fire that they're working on. It's kind of one of the challenges of the fire service in the West Coast now, is it's almost year round and they have to be prepared. So it's a huge challenge.
Yeah. Well, thank you for what you do as a firefighter, what you have done, and the business you are building. It actually addresses some of the issues that can happen in this industry. But so as we talk about LogRx, I always like to get the background of like, what led you to entrepreneurship? Okay, you're working for the government, and somehow you became an entrepreneur. Walk us through this journey.
Great question. And so my first dabble in entrepreneurship started with another tech company called Exposure Tracker. And I sustained some pretty nasty injuries as a firefighter over the years. And in 2014, I left Contra Costa Fire because I had some pretty serious lung damage. And so I started a company called Exposure Tracker to help firefighters track all of their exposures in the field so that they had some sort of historical record for medical reasons. And also we've developed analytics, so maybe there'd be a way to identify future patterns of behavior that would lead to certain lung disease and so on. And so I worked on that for a few years and ended up getting acquired from a company called Envisage in Indiana. I worked for them for a couple of years. And I eventually went back into the fire service as a fire chief because I didn't have to be in the field. But I got ADHD and I can't sit still. And so I would just pick up on these challenges out there. And one of them was tracking narcotics in the fire service and for medical services on ambulances. And agencies, first off, paramedics are on fire engines or on ambulances, and they administer narcotics for like pain relief. I was at Sonoma Raceway yesterday coaching motorcycle riding. We had a guy break his clavicle in a crash. And so I helped him treat him with the paramedics, and they administered fentanyl for his pain. And so a lot of these agencies were using pen and paper, and there's this old thing in the fire service that one of my old chiefs taught me. He said, what's predictable is preventable. If someone's tracking narcotics on pen and paper, eventually at some point, one of those pieces of paper is going to get lost, or someone's not going to fill it out, or it's going to be an error in when they fill it out. And then you're going to have trouble tracking narcotics. And then the law enforcement agency comes in, the DEA comes in, and you look really bad at managing your organization, because ultimately your members are only going to take something as serious as you do. And so if a manager or a fire chief doesn't take something serious, you're heading towards disaster.
Well, let's talk about this problem. So you're solving the problem of the pen and paper, but why are we so serious about tracking this stuff? What are the problems that occur when you don't track your stuff?
So there's a number of different things, whether it's malicious or just negligence. But fentanyl I mean, it's in the news every day. People are taking it and dying because it's so potent. And if someone's walking in the street and they see a vial, or there's an incident, not in my old agency in Tahoe, but another one where they dropped a vial of fentanyl in the snow and then they couldn't find it. And they eventually they had to take the patient to the hospital. So they went back, they searched for everyone ever. They couldn't find it. They notified the local law enforcement agency, basically saying we lost narcotics. So now this little vial of fentanyl is sitting in the snow, and in the spring when that surfaces, if someone comes along and sees it, it could kill them. And so by using some sort of tracking method, at least then with scanning and using our software, you can track the GPS location of where it was last found and so on. So, and you know exactly how much was in that vial. And so there's a lot of different ways that errors can occur with narcotics. And our program isn't bulletproof. It's not going to prevent anything and everything from happening, but it's the highest level of accountability to help reduce those incidents occurring.
Well, I can imagine that there's errors that are just human error happens. And then there's also many of these drugs are very addictive and people want to get their hands on them really bad. And I have to imagine that one of the problems is they just sort of come up missing because maybe people are created a side business there or something like that. And, you know, end up having good access to the drugs and they steal them.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that happens.
It does. And you hit the nail on the head with the human factor. And when you consider there's however many tens of thousands of paramedics and, you know, there's 30,000 fire departments in the country, and you got to figure at least 2/3 of them have paramedics. And so that's a lot of narcotics that are out there. And so it's enticing.
How much is it? I'm sorry. Can you go back on that? It, like a lot of narcotics is there a dollar amount that's typically in inventory? Do you have any that kind of information?
I wouldn't have the exact dollar amount. Ironically, narcotics are not expensive to make.
Oh, okay.
They're just not. Like I was talking to an agency yesterday, a couple days ago, with one of the drugs Versed, and they only had a couple of them in their drug box. I said, well, why don't you just add more? They're a dollar each, and it would save you all this manpower of going back and forth to restock the firehouses. And so the drugs themselves are actually inexpensive.
Gotcha.
It's just what they are and the damage they can cause if they get out into the world is the hard part. And so what we've designed is a way to help kind of reduce the likelihood of it disappearing. And then there's a big factor of just keeping honest people honest. Yeah. You know, if they see that this program can physically show that this drug was checked this morning by a certain firefighter and verified by another firefighter, they're less likely to think, you know, this is tempting. I'm just going to take this.
Yeah. So you guys track it all digitally. Maybe just walk me through the different times when it gets logged, if you will, when the prescription gets logged and who has access to this data.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to clarify, so a fire department has narcotics, but it's just for the paramedics to distribute to patients when they go to like yesterday at Sonoma Raceway, it's broken clavicle. So he got some pain relief. That's the whole purpose as to why these paramedics will carry a narcotic in the first place. And so anytime the narcotics change hands, you know, one firefighter goes off duty, another one comes on duty, they have to sign out and sign in for those narcotics because they have to be able to show the DEA if there's ever an audit who is in possession of those narcotics at any given time. And so we thought, well, let's find a solution that doesn't require any agency to buy any kind of hardware and takes advantage of their current software or hardware, which would be smartphones or tablets. Mm-hmm. And so we built it into the current technology that cell phones offer with GPS tracking, scanners, biometrics. So it'll show whose face and fingerprint ID was used when tracking narcotics. And it's real simple to wear at. We can be working with a company in London who's using our program, and we can have them up and running in an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Easy to use. You've made it very user-friendly, it sounds like.
Yes. There's an old saying that we you want to make things firefighter-proof. You know, there's an old joke that you put a firefighter in a sealed room with two ball bearings, you turn the lights out, turn them back on, one's missing, the other one's broken, he doesn't know what happened. Okay. And so we wanted to build the app with only two buttons, so it's nice and simple. And I say this as a firefighter, so I want to keep things simple for myself as well. And so the designers, the software developers, they'll build it and then I'll try and break it because I'm a firefighter. And so I want to do something that the guys in the field, men and women in the field, are going to be able to use comfortably and not tell their supervisor that it doesn't work.
Yeah. And from the humility, you kind of heard the humility come out because firefighters are some of the smartest people on the planet. But their priority is keeping people safe and healthy and all that kind of stuff. Keeping cats out of the trees, or whatever they do, whatever right. you guys do. But it's important work. And so focusing on smaller processes might not be the thing that they are going to get. They're loved. They're going to fall in love with. So with that said, so when it comes to this data, is it housed at the, does the fire station have access to that? Is that the state? Is it the federal government? Who has access to the data to maybe monitor what's going on?
So it would just be the administrators in that organization.
Okay.
And so they monitor, there's two components. We have the app, which is based on iPhones and an Android. And they're native apps. They're built for those phones. It's not just a browser software. And then there's a cloud-based website for the administrators to log on, and they can see everything in real time. And so if one of the firefighters is out in the field and they administer some narcotics, as soon as they scan it and say how much they administered, the administrators are going to see who did that in their exact GPS location. And so that way they have total accountability of everything that occurs from cradle to grave when they get those medications.
Okay. I mean, you're solving a big, big problem. But I characterized you as a startup. How would you characterize the stage of the company today?
This year, we're still a startup for sure. We're still a small team. We didn't take any investors. We thought, you know, let's bootstrap this. Let's get it done on our own. Because my co-founder, Sky Thompson, he's also had other experiences in startups. And so we thought, you know what, we can bootstrap this. We can build our own. And so I was still classified as a startup, but we're in that hockey stick, that all desirable hockey stick phase, because this year, and this, the reason I left my fire chief position is LogRx was taking off. We're getting more and more customers, primarily through word of mouth, and other industries are now interested in us. Okay. Because they have similar challenges as the fire service with tracking narcotics. And so we're kind of in a phase where we're taking off.
What a great position to be able to bootstrap a tech company like this, where, you know, I talk about venture capital on our show a lot, and deal with tech companies that are taking money and being diluted, right? They have less ownership in their company. Do you see yourself continuing to do that? I mean, if you're already in hockey stick mode, does that mean you never plan to take venture capital?
You never want to say never, yeah. But right now, and my whole team, we got together last week in Salt Lake City where our CTOs, our chief technology officers based, and we basically did a bunch of strategic planning on how we want to take the company. And based off kind of what we came up with, we're going to stick with our current team. And if we decide we want to expand into other modules or other platforms, then we'll reevaluate costs. Cause right now we're doing well enough that we're bringing on a larger development team. That's been kind of the slow point for us is getting all these ideas done, which probably a lot of tech companies have a challenge with. So we're going to continue this path, but as we expand, we might have to go to the path of, yeah. of investors.
Yeah, it just depends. Now, so, really interesting because most tech companies aren't doing it this way. And so I'm really inspired by that. And not to take anything away from anybody that's going out there and you know, raising money, but you have two founders that have had previous success and resources to, you know, start the thing and get it rolling to this point. What's that battle look like? I put my money, I put my own money into the things I've done as well. And that's, there's pros and cons. One of the cons is it's more stressful, right? Because it's your money, or, you know, your wife's money.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that in terms of like bootstrapping and, you know, the stress that you might have had while you were bootstrapping it?
Yeah, and you're spot on. It was very stressful up until this year because okay. we were funding it. It's our money that we're staking on this idea. But with the growth we've had this year, we've basically measured out our burn rate in relation to revenue, and we're going to be fine. There's no concern about running out of money. In fact, we've mapped out our budget with our current plans, and we're going to make it okay. And if we had to, like, say something happened, we could scale back and still be cash flow positive. And so we're in a very good position to where I can relax. We can all relax a little bit more. At this point, we're safe to say our company is going to survive just fine with our growth. And part of that is we've had zero churn. None of our customers have left.
Wow.
Yeah, they've been happy with us. A lot of our business through word of mouth because they're so happy with us. And we don't take that for granted. We always work to keep our customers happy. But we have a very sticky product. You know, once they start using it, they're not going to go back to pen and paper. And frankly, the few competitors we have out there are just not the same model. And so they're not really doing it as well as we are. So we're kind of over a little bit of that hump of stress. And now it's just to the point of, okay, how fast can we grow and what do we need to do that?
Any lesson there for other entrepreneurs in terms of, you know, so zero churn, sticky product, any lesson in there or learning that you had in developing that?
Yeah, we were able to accomplish that because we were bootstrapping and because we were going slow. We all had other jobs that I didn't want to leave as a fire chief until I was kind of forced to because of the company's growth. And so we had the luxury of constant interaction with customers on a slow rate because we didn't take off that fast. And when you have that kind of constant feedback, you're able to develop the product to the customer's needs versus just getting all this funding, sending a bunch of developers out, building something, and then it's out there and you're like, oh shoot, we didn't think about these things. Because even though I've got a ton of experience, I don't know everything. And so I think because we went slow, because we went bootstrapped, we were able to get that very valuable customer feedback that gave us kind of that slow increase in growth to where we then were able to launch. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. That's a sound bite right there for some micro content, Scott. Because that's really, to me, that's very good information for as people take their approach. They all think they need to go get a bunch of funding and like, look, get something built, get the bugs out of it and learn, spend some time learning what people like and don't like about it. So you mentioned also, so you're in this hockey stick moment and you're getting attention from, sounds like other verticals, right? There are other types of customers that could use this same type of product. What do you think's next on the horizon as that starts to unfold?
We're focusing a lot on the wildlife industry, the veterinary world.
Okay.
They're in desperate need of something that we have a solution for. And so we found that they're very intrigued.
Okay, they're utilizing the same kind of medications to put into animals to help them with their pain or what have you.
Yeah, and some of them aren't even necessarily regulated by the DEA as severely as like fentanyl. But nonetheless, they're drugs used for euthanizing bears, you know, okay. a huge animal. And so these things are very potent and they just want to know where they are. And if one goes missing, what happened to it? And so part of it is just their responsible attitude of wanting to make sure that the drugs they're carrying are accounted for. And some of these agencies are very, very large, like California Fish and Game. And so they got people all throughout the state that they're trying to monitor from Sacramento. And so we're helping them manage the same challenges that the firefighters have dealt with.
So you'll have, you know, if that's your next vertical, does that spread into veterinary clinics and small independents, or are you going to try to stay with, we'll call it government agencies, larger companies?
It's going a lot of different routes, zoos, wildlife parks, veterinary clinics. There are certain areas in the country where they're doing like studies on raccoons and they're looking to track the medication being used. And so honestly, we're not even sure how big that total market is for us yet. We just know that it's intriguing and there's definitely a need for our program in it.
So as you build out feature sets and so on, the product continues to improve. Do you see it going outside of medication?
That's one of the things we were discussing
other
last week.
Asset tracking, planning.
Yeah, it's equipment tracking for firefighters, their turnout gear, the coats and pants they wear. They're okay. Only good for 10 years. You're supposed to track it every time they're washed, every time they're fired.
You're going after your same customer base. That makes it a nice adjacent sale.
Yeah. So back to your question about investors, that might be the trigger. Like, okay. There's a huge untapped market that we're not taking advantage of, or we already have that market and we could be expanding within it.
Wow. Very interesting. Okay. I really love your approach. I mean, it's obviously when stuff's working, you love the, you know, it's obvious that the approach is right on. But that to me, everything's a leadership issue, right? So whether you get something off the ground, you got no one to look at, but the guy you see when you look in the mirror, and your co-founder, but that you're the CEO, you're the guy that has to face the music. And so as you think about helping the next entrepreneur in line, I know you learned some of your, I guess, leadership lessons through the fire industry, through being a firefighter and a fire chief, but you also have a background and a passion for sports. Maybe let's talk about that a little bit. So where did you, I guess, build some of your foundational principles for how to be good with people?
Great question.
How to win.
Yeah. I've always been a competitive person, done sports my whole life. Like I said, I was at Sonoma Raceway yesterday. It was a motorcycle track day. And so I work for a company that we teach. So I do that a few times a year. That's my de-stressing time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just the point I can make about that question is the team, the members are everything. You can have the best fire department in the world. You can have the best pay in the world. But if the team you're working with can't trust one another, if there's challenges and personalities, it's going to be an uphill battle. I think the biggest challenge with being a fire chief isn't budget. It's not dealing with like the city manager or other agencies. It's if you have a culture that's not going in the right direction. Changing the culture is the most difficult thing any fire chief can deal with. So to answer your question, the team is everything. And so is in my experience in sports, even if you're on like an underdog team, if you're working together, you still have a better shot than the team that goes in too overconfident. And that goes back to me saying earlier, I don't want to take it for granted that we've had zero churn. We need to make sure we still treat our customers as good as we possibly can.
Yeah. What sport? What were your sports? What did you play besides the motorcycles? What else were you involved in? Because that seems like kind of like an individual sport.
It is. I actually did a lot of individual as well as teams. I did pole vault, which was also individual. I did wrestling as individual, but I was big into baseball. I loved baseball, and soccer. I was a big soccer player. And so I think those were the main ones, but I've always been intrigued with racing because my uncle was a motorcycle racer. And so he got me into it.
Okay.
But even so, when I go to the racetrack, we have our own race team. Like there's a group of us that all work for the same company. But when we go to the races, we all pit together. We help one another out because you might be racing in a different class. So one of their members will be putting the tire warmers on to get the tires hot before they go out while the rider's getting ready. So, and then there might be like saying, hey, we're having some issues in turn one because of the heat of the tracks. You might want to drop your tire pressure a pound. So it still is a very team effort, big team effort in the motorcycle world. It's just when you're out on the track, you might be in by yourself. If that makes sense.
Yeah. One of the things I've seen in some, you know, I love sports and played as a kid and coached. And I see so many parallels with that in building a business. And I agree with you. It's about the team. And one of the things that I think builds that trust with people is adversity. And so going through a series of losses together or a slump in baseball, when you're going through these tougher times, I sometimes feel like those are the times that really have that's really kind of the measure of the leadership is, can we use these tougher times to bring people together?
Yeah. And my first department, Contra Costa County Fire, I spent like, I think 14, 15 years there. We had some pretty bad things occur, some tragedies. And so I think those brought us all together into where to this day, I haven't seen some of them for 5 years. And if I called them right now and say a flat tire, they would come help me out and vice versa. And so going through those challenges together in a very busy department, kind of dealing with those hardships did bring us together. And with LogRx, my co-founder and I, we've had other experience, other startups, and we thought, okay, we're gonna do this one right, and we're gonna do it together because that team, we know we get along great. We have diversity. He has a business background, I have an industry background, so we bring different things to the table, and then you bring our chief technology officer. Obviously, they get their own skill set that I could never do. And so those hardships and experience really does make the team.
Yeah, you bet. Well, you know, you guys both have skin in the game. Has there been whether it be in your in LogRx or in other times when, like, you're mentioning somebody come help you with a tire that you haven't seen in 5 years, like, those kind of relationships seem to come through shared sacrifice. With somebody's already taken a bullet for you or taken some hit for you personally, and now it sort of comes back around, or you, even if it doesn't, you know it could if needed.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, just now remembered yesterday, I got a text out of the blue, guy I worked with forever ago, and he said, "You okay?" Not, "Hey, this so and so," but he thought I still lived up where the mosquito fire is occurring. So all he said is, "Are you okay?" And so it's that kind of relationship where you cannot see someone for years, but they know that they can just text me and say, you know, "Are you good?" And we'll be right back to where we were.
Cool. That's so cool. Yeah. Lifelong relationships.
Yeah.
What a concept. So you, you live in El Dorado Hills now? Where's your?
Sacramento.
Oh, you're in Sacramento. Yep. That's right. You're in Sacramento. Yeah. You're way away from the fire. Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, I had El Dorado Hills because El Dorado County, we're talking about how we might work together with El Dorado County and knowing that you were, you know, I guess El Dorado County and South Placer Fire Chief, have a, you know, it's the same team.
Yeah. And I was South Lake Tahoe Fire Chief.
Oh, South Lake Tahoe.
And
sorry.
I was, Garden Valley Fire Chief too for a period. So I wore a couple fire chief hats in El Dorado County.
Okay.
And I was a president for the El Dorado County Fire Chiefs Association for a while. And gotcha. So I'm deeply rooted in El Dorado County.
Yeah. I had in my mind El Dorado County when I was talking to you. Okay, so thinking about our audience, and you know, you've given some great nuggets of wisdom. What else should I be asking you that could help the aspiring entrepreneur or the business person looking for their hockey stick moment? Let's talk to that earlier stage person a little bit. Maybe we can kind of get some extra nuggets out of you of wisdom that we could share.
I think from my experience and being around other startups, one of the mistakes I've seen that I made myself with my previous startup is you think I have this great idea. So from my other one example, I can create this exposure tracking concept. And so firefighters can go in and enter their information. Let's find a way to automate it. And so sometimes you let the idea steer the startup when really what you need to do is look at what is the problem? What is the problem you're trying to solve? And then work backwards. Is my idea actually going to solve their issue? I had one of our team members yesterday who's working with an organization that they're trying to sign up for our program. He asked me, you know, what should we have them do? Or he said, you know, should we have them do a trial? I said, yes, it's perfect, because if they like it, they're not going to leave. They're going to use it. And if they don't like it, we don't want them using it. We only want them using it if we're solving their problem, because if they don't like it, they hang on to it, they're not going to have a good experience, and they might tell people it's not the best program out there. And we want our customers to brag about us. And so I think I caught this guy off guard who's doing some sales for us, because I was telling him we don't want them to make that sale. And so kind of your question, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, if they look and see what problem am I trying to solve and go backwards from there, it can really help steer their development.
Now, you're solving a big problem. Did you and your co-founder develop some kind of purpose? I mean, is the reason you're doing it to save lives? Is there some broader purpose or deeper purpose that that you guys are rallying around?
There's a couple. For one, we are trying to solve a big problem throughout not just the country, but the world. We also have customers in England, which we're flying to see in a couple of days. We also want to improve the industry that we both are passionate about, because if we can improve the efficiency of an agency's narcotics tracking, which is very important, then they don't have to worry about that. They can focus on their job of saving lives. You know, if they're trying to track narcotics, if our app isn't working well and firefighters are struggling with it, then we're a distraction for them. And so we're trying to improve the efficiency so they can do their jobs better, which is one of the things I took from being an entrepreneur into my experience as a fire chief. As a fire chief, I would always run the department as a business, because as an entrepreneur, you have to be efficient or you're going under.
Yeah. I'll bet that was well received by county leadership and so on, running it like a business rather than the way some, you know, government gets a bad rap, right? Municipal government is not as bureaucratic as federal or state, but government kind of gets lumped in this one category as kind of like bureaucratic. So it's refreshing to me to hear entrepreneurial thinking in at the fire department.
Right.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It does. You do get some sideways looks at first because as an entrepreneur, you recognize you have to be efficient. You have to be creative. You have to have a high level of accountability. And so when you bring those to a government agency, when you're a department head, you have to convince them like, no, we have to constantly improve our product because the customers demand it, or they're going to get tired of us and they're going to move on, or they're going to complain about us. You also can't let bureaucracy stand in your way. Being in government, there's constantly bureaucracies that you have to overcome. So as an entrepreneur, you're like, nope, I'm going to find a way through it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're developing partnerships. We have a partnership with the city of Roseville, with the city of Rockland, talked about El Dorado County. And we're talking to other municipalities because we think, we know, and you're living proof that if people get exposed to innovation and entrepreneurship, whether you're an employee at the county or any big business, you're going to create a more innovative culture. And that innovative culture keeps us from being over-reliant on one particular industry. We can innovate within our companies and within our organizations to be more entrepreneurial. And that keeps us from being, you know, Blockbuster or, you know, Kodak or, you know, Detroit, Michigan or something like that, where you've kind of like, you got a little complacent. And I think it's refreshing to hear this. And that's kind of part of what's important to me as we build out the Growth Factory and some of the things I'm working on. Even with this show, I had government leaders on here two shows ago, and we're talking about how to develop a more innovative culture within our organization. So maybe I'll throw out the final question. What did I not ask you that maybe you want to get out in the world? I've kind of steered it down the fire department, but I want to make sure you have a chance to sort of share anything, any message that you want to get out on behalf of your company or on behalf of the industry.
I think that with all the different dynamics of today's society, there's a lot of opportunity that maybe people didn't have 20 years ago when I was a bit younger. And so I think with programs like what you have here, there's startups, there's a lot of mentoring. I think that somebody can just go from being an intern and learning a lot of different dynamics about ways to be creative themselves. I don't think I'm the smartest person by any means. I just always told my staff, I just never give up. And so if I get knocked down, I'm just going to get up with a blackened eye and a smile. And so I think that if somebody's got desire and passion, this country truly does allow you to excel, and it's all on you. Like you mentioned earlier about as a leader, it's all on your shoulders. Other countries we take for granted, like some third world countries, if you're lower class, you're never getting out. This country is not that. There's a term called learned helplessness, which is a thing that people get where they think, well, I can never achieve because my parents tell me I'm just not going to be able to make it. And so I'm not even going to bother going to college. This country really has opportunities, and Sacramento is great for like a startup world to where people have every opportunity in the world. It's just applying themselves. And so, the long story to say that if you just go with your goals and never give up, you're going to succeed one way or the other. And failures are just part of the process to succeeding. I can tell you how many times I failed at things and I just don't let it slow me down. I learn from it, move on.
Wow. If you don't love this guy, you don't love entrepreneurship, you don't love America. And he's got the coolest name in the world, Clive Savakul. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. I'm super proud to know you and super grateful for what you've done and what you're doing to save, you know, to help change the world. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks for what you do for the communities. It's one of the reasons I'm in Sacramento now, on top of this, is what my wife brought me here. And I can thank people like you enough for helping the startup community.
Thank you, Clive.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. And today we heard the story of Clive Savakul and LogRx. Talked about when the time is right to get venture capital a little bit. But we specifically talked about what these firefighters are going through up at the Mosquito Fire and all the other fires that are sort of surfacing. But at the beginning of the show, I mentioned to you that I have somebody that I go to yoga with. My studio, one of the studios I go to, has an office in Roseville and up in Auburn. So the people up in Auburn have this direct hit, if you will, to many of them, in that they are in and around they're located in and around the Forest Hill area. And so one of the people that I go to yoga with was sharing her story the other day, and she had to get evacuated. And that evacuation, as you might imagine, was not easy. She had simply minutes to decide what she was going to take when she was evacuating. So she went through that thought process that I guess we've all gone through at times, but she went through it sort of under the gun, if you will. What am I going to take with? If I could take anything with me, knowing that my house might get burned to the ground, what would I take? And I think her takeaway from it was interesting, because as she was sharing this in yoga, she said, "I decided this changed me. This process of deciding it changed me. And I now am going to go back when I get my stuff back, probably weed out some of those things that really aren't really as important, right? All these material things that we put in our life, they're not as important as some of the other things." So my hope is to have her and some other entrepreneurs on the show in the coming weeks, as the fire is contained and we're a little out of the woods, if you will, and share some real stories of what's happened for the entrepreneurs up and around the Forest Hill area. So kind of think about that coming in the weeks to come. So hopefully this is handled here shortly. But just to everybody that's out there in that scenario, we can feel for you. I was evacuated from my home in 1973 when there was a big railroad explosion. And I think one of the lessons I take away from that, and I think maybe my yoga friend has this same thing. She went to stay with her daughter. Like, where are you going to go? That's a lot of people are totally displaced. They got nowhere to go. There's nobody to help them. And when we were displaced in 1973, there was the bombs going out of the railroad yard in Roseville. It was April of 1973. It's like, where do we go? And we only had one vehicle at the time. It was my dad's work truck. And he owned a TV appliance shop. And they were just getting ready to move in downtown Roseville from one location to the other. And we had a pickup truck. And there was not really room for the mom and dad and the six kids to, pack up and leave. So one of his employees loaned him the car. And I can only think to myself as to, you having a little bit of credit on your account matters, right? So if you've given a little bit more than you take in these areas of your life, then people feel like they want to help you. And in that particular case, my dad had teammates that wanted to help him. We borrowed the car. We went over to my grandpa's house, who we weren't close with. And it was actually the last time second to last time I ever saw my grandfather, because we went over there and we were hoping just to kind of hang out at his house for a few hours while we were waiting for evacuation orders. And they kind of turned us away. They can say, you can stay here for about a half hour or so, but look, we don't really want company right now. And I don't think my mom never forgave him. I don't think my dad did either, because we're at this time of desperation and we're getting turned away by my grandfather. And, I didn't see him again until right before he died, and it was inadvertent. But I think the lesson in there, it is, we've got to give more than we take from this world. If we want people to be there for us when we're in our tougher times. So if we're there for other people's tougher times, like for now, the people going through the situation in Forest Hill, you know, it all comes back around. What goes around comes around. And I think that's why I love investing locally, is because we're investing into people that are going to be in my life for years to come. And hopefully I'm giving a little bit more than I take. I certainly get a lot from them in terms of living vicariously through their successes and really keeping me younger by hanging around all this younger tech. It really does something for me. So in many ways, I feel like I get more than I give. But hopefully I'm creating, my team is creating, our community is creating this sort of idea that we give a little bit more than we take, and there's this economy of favors that ends up building. And together, working together, it can become the backyard advantage for our entrepreneurs and for all of us, maybe for our entire community, that maybe putting our money where our town is, putting our effort where our town is, really has a lot of merit to it. And, you know, we could all be shipping our money all over the world, donating to causes all over the world. And it's not wrong, but there's something special and I think very helpful to us when we invest into the people that we're closest to in proximity. So for all of you out there that are trying to figure it out, go through the battle, you know, go through the battle of entrepreneurship. And for all you out there that are helping keep us safe, all the firefighters, all the first responders, and everybody that's out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. And to the 13 stripes and the 50 stars and that one American dream, always worth fighting for, yours. We're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.